Podcast like a motherfucker.
Welcome back to Amatime Podcast, episode number
88.
Sorry.
Yeah. Christmas edition.
Yeah, we're still. I guess it's technically still a Christmas edition.
Yeah, exactly. The sober part of the Christmas edition.
The morning after. The morning after the not so sober part.
Yeah, exactly.
So yesterday we recorded the Orc and Goblin background stuff, and I think this will be probably a separate episode.
Yeah, sure.
So. New episode.
Yeah, okay. Episode number plus one.
So we're going to do a little bit of a different one today, which is we're going to talk about the old world and some of the things that we've seen in the sneak peeks.
Yeah.
Because I think we're quite excited about this.
Yeah.
At least I am. Not because I think Ninth Age isn't doing a good job, but just to get some Games Workshop stuff.
Yeah, let's say Flair, maybe that's a good way to say it. Like, there is something to, you know, like, a lot of Games Workshop games I don't enjoy mechanically. Like, I've tried to play Age of Sigmar, for example. It's just not for me. Like, I don't find it that fun. But, obviously, there is definitely something to just being able to, like, turn up in any city in the world and find somebody to play games with, and just this, like, you go to a tournament and there's loads of people kind of thing, and there's always flashy stuff.
The thought of going to, like, a 100-person event is quite enticing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, for me, like, I've always said, I've always been, like, a fluff player.
Yeah.
Always.
Even at your, what was it, 80-something points, we'd see?
Yeah. Yeah, but...
Snake Forest.
Like. But at Ninth Age, it's difficult to be a fluff player.
Yeah. I think the game doesn't lend itself to that.
No.
It's like the... But I think that's, like, both good and bad. I was talking to one of my friends who is not really into the game as much. But it's like, when you made a list back in the day... You were like, what are the cool units I want to have? Like, what do I think is, like, interesting about this army? Whereas now you're like... What's the best thing? But you could actually make the best thing and it's still not that good, you know, compared to if you made the best thing possible in 8th edition, then...
Yeah, it would be like not fun. One character, a unit of archers and a bolt thrower.
Yeah, in a building.
And in a building.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Or, like, I think... So in Munich, there is communities playing, like, 8th edition still. And then somebody from the Knife Edge group went to one of their tournaments, and then they were like, okay, let me, like, make the most competitive list, and he took, like, you know, I don't know, 4 Shrieking Horrors or something, whatever you could do. And then, like, every game, like, he could just tell that his opponents were, like, you know, not happy, like, not having fun. He was just like, take your shit, take it off. And then all the games finished before turn 3 or whatever, and then his opponents were just like, what was that? Because they're all fluff players, yeah.
But, like, for me, it's going to be... I'm quite looking forward to potentially playing this and playing like a high elf army and putting all the dragons in it and I guess they were dragon princes and stuff like that. Like, for me, because it's something about the game, like, speaks to me like this.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm definitely going to try Old World.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think that's, like, it's only fair, right? Like, you have to try it, and then if it sucks, but there's a chance that it's okay, you know?
Yeah, I think so too. And the way that 3.0 is looking at the moment, it's,
so enticing, right?
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
But I think what we want to do is just have a quick look through all the sneak peeks, and maybe we can discuss why we're, like, I wouldn't say excited, but... I would say I've got a little bit of a tickle.
Okay.
And I want to
tickle and taint.
Yeah, I want to see what's about. So we're just gonna go through some of the Games Workshop sneak peeks and give you our thoughts.
Yeah, one of those words.
So this is a cool artwork.
Yeah, we're in the.
So looking at the first fluff piece,
first look at
the rules. That, like, this is really cool. Like, for me, as, like, a high elf player.
Yeah, there's a line of like, kind of bright high elf spearmen fighting off, what is it, goblins and wolves, I guess?
Yeah. It's very, like, Tolkien-y, right?
Yeah, exactly, because it's very much like the forces of darkness against the forces of light or whatever.
Yeah. It's like a really cool artwork.
Yeah, definitely.
So the first thing that we learn is that they talk about the turn sequence. So we have four different turns in the game, I guess.
Yeah, phases, I guess.
The key thing is that there's no magic phase.
Yeah.
But we have a strategy phase, a movement phase, a shooting phase, and a combat phase.
Yeah. And like the spells seem that they are going to be distributed out through the phases where they are relevant. Like if you cast a fireball, you'll do that in the shooting phase. If you have some kind of
movement spell
in the movement phase, yeah. If you have a like spell that does damage in melee, maybe it's in the combat phase, whatever. In the strategy phase, it seems to be like buffing and debuffing spells.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if I like that, but I think it makes mechanical sense. It'll definitely speed the game up.
It's simple, but to me, I think this would be the biggest drawback for me for this game, at least at this point, is that I... Like, one of the things I never liked about playing 40K, for example, was the fact that there is no magic phase. Like, I really like the magic minigame of, like, having a little pool of dice and having to go, like, okay, I'm going to invest resources in doing this, and then you're trying to trick your opponent in, like, the order you cast the spells.
It might work like that. It could... We can talk about it when we talk about the magic a bit more, but, yeah, sure. I mean, based on this first look, you have a pool of dice, and then you have to, like, spread them out across your turn. So I'm like, well, Casimir, I'm going to cast my... my movement spell now. Do you want to stop that, or do you want to wait and see what I'm going to cast in the combat phase? So then there is like still like a minigame. Yeah, sure. But like
that part I just haven't understood yet from the sneak peek. I think it's not entirely clear if you're like, for example, if you can always just cast all your spells, or if you have to, if it says like, oh, this wizard can cast like one spell per turn, and he has like all these different spells to choose from. Like that's not clear from the sneak peek.
Yeah, so. But we have to wait and see, right? Yeah.
But yeah, other things you can do in the strategy phase is like, this seems really cool that you have like items that you can activate that change like the, you know, the like the board space. Maybe you have like an item that prevents people from flying or
this is the example like that they give, right?
Yeah.
And it's also quite nostalgic to see the same old items and the same spells. Like the Falcon Hall, Falcon Horn of Fredemund.
Fredemund.
This is obviously something for the KOE.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they had this before as well.
Yeah, I didn't mean
And I'm pretty sure I've got caught out by this before as well.
Especially with playing fucking hidden lists.
Yeah, your dragon cannot fly. You're like, fuck.
You're like, is that really on your list? And they're like, yes, it is. Like, show me the paper.
It's handwritten real quick. Yeah. I mean, that's also going to be something, right? Imagine playing Ninth Age with Hidden List.
That would be weird.
That could be fun, actually.
It could be pretty fun. Like, I think you just have to get in a different mindset.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think a lot of people playing Ninth Age are not in that mindset. No. It's like full control all the time.
Yeah.
And I think when you play a game...
Autism level 10.
You play a Gage Worship game, you just have to accept that unexpected things are going to happen, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh shit, that guy does have a big nasty sword.
Yeah.
When I thought it was just a wizard.
Yeah, exactly. Or you just like... You have a character that seems like he's really cool and you avoid him and then he has nothing
in his hands.
Yeah.
Alright, so we also got a little sneak peek of a combat spell.
Yeah, from Tomb Kings, Jaff's Incantation.
It is the Tomb Kings. It's not actually
Cursed Blades.
You don't have to like drink all the time.
Yeah. maybe if we, you know, if we become an old world podcast, we have to reverse Switch. The game.
Like, yeah, when we talk about old world, it has to be old world names. You can't use Ninth Age names. It's gonna get mad.
That'd be really fun. Yeah, so basically this spell has like always been a thing for Tomb Kings. It always been like back in 6th edition, I think it made you like attack out of sequence. Like you cast it on a unit and they just like attack once, which is pretty weird.
Yeah.
And then in 8th edition it gave you +1 attack, and now it seems to give you everybody in the command range, I guess that's like Inspiring Presence, like 12 inches, gets reroll natural hit rolls of 1.
Yeah.
That seems like
This is an enchantment, so that's actually happening in the strategy phase.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like when you're fighting, you have to do it like early, I guess.
Yeah. So I guess you can do it and then charge.
Yeah.
So that's actually another interesting mechanic, because in Ninth Age, you charge and then you cast the magic to buff the combat. Exactly. But this one, you have to
decide first.
In the strategy phase what you're going to do, and then if you cast it, because you can also then decide, well, I didn't cast a spell, so I'm not going to charge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it didn't go off. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that gives you a lot more control.
It's quite interesting,
It's also interesting that it's kind of toned down a bit. I think if we look at, like, okay, what does the magic do compared to 8th edition, this spell is kind of tame. Like, reroll natural hit rolls of 1, I mean, you would never cast that.
This is, like, one of, like, the lowest level buffs you can get, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that was the first sneak peek. We also got some cool artwork here of some orcs butchering some what looks like marauders.
Yeah, exactly, some, like, humans.
Yeah. So, the next one... is the movement phase. Sorry, reusing some old artwork here.
Yeah, that's this is the Knights of the Realm box art, I think.
Yeah.
So basically, they've brought back. So they have close and open order, and I don't quite remember what open order was, but. Yeah. But it's like they brought back the skirmish, the old skirmish.
I don't like this.
That's terrible.
This is giving me like an aneurysm just looking at the diagram.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's like you remember like playing back in 7th or whatever, and if somebody had like a huge unit of skirmishers, like the beastmen.
You could do it in like any shape you want.
Yeah, like but what happened was that people would just put a pile of gore like on one location and go like they're here because you can't be bothered to put like 30 models around, you know.
And the way that the skirmish looks like, I think it says that you have to be within like 1 inch of
another model. Yeah, it's kind of like 40k kind of thing. I don't like that.
Yeah, I'd rather just have it like we have in Ninth Age with the trays, so that makes me a bit hesitant.
Mm.
But I think in reality, people are probably used to Ninth now and will just use the trays.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I will because I'm not fucking around
Moving like one guy, you have like 20 archers or whatever, you're like, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. Which is also like one of the reasons why playing 40k in Age of Sigmar is so fucking annoying because I hate moving all those like
one models. By one. Yeah.
They also brought back the lance formation.
Yeah.
Like the triangular. The
triangle one.
I don't think this is maybe a good idea either because it's stupid. Like it looks stupid and it will be stupid to make trays for. But I have some KOE players love it, right? Or whatever it's called, Bretonians.
Yeah. Seems like you can have a marching column.
Yeah, this is the weirdest one, I think.
Yeah, and I guess you get to move faster if you're deeper.
Yeah, so it's like you have to be... I think in general it's an interesting thing. Like if you want to fight well, you have to be wider than you are deeper.
Yeah.
So we're not really going to see like deep blocks in general. Everything's going to be kind of wide.
Yeah.
Which I think is... It kind of probably represents like what units actually fighting in like battles would maybe look like more of the time.
Yeah.
Like having a huge deep column is not something that would ever work, you know, like in any battle, right? But what I don't like, so it's like you reform deeper than you're wide, and then you get to like triple your movement when you march. I think that was kind of what it was. But that to me seems really weird because first of all, you have to like reform all the time, which is going to be super stupid and annoying. But it seems like you can go in combat order and just march double your movement. So as somebody said, it's like, okay, well, if I want to get to a location, it's going to take me a turn to like reform and maybe you can move your base movement. And then you can move triple your movement. So let's say in 2 turns, you moved four.
The same distance that you would if you just stayed in the same formation.
Yeah, exactly. So it only ever makes sense, it seems like, to do this if you were going to use the marching column more than 1 turn. So you say you want to move like really... Double, like triple the distance twice. Like
two or three turns in a row.
And is that ever going to happen? Like only maybe if you both score an objective or something?
Yeah, maybe end game.
Yeah.
Something like that. But also something to note here is that the diagrams are showing units like 4 wide,
mm-hmm.
which for a marching column in this case. So maybe there's not going to be so many rules about like how wide the formation needs to be.
Yeah.
Because in 9th we're used to 5, and that was also the same in
8th
edition. But maybe now it's 4.
Maybe, but it seems to me like you don't get any fighting bonus if you're not wider than you are deep. So that seems to be the biggest one.
So it also goes into the different elements of the movement phase. So you have charges, you have the same stand and shoot reactions and stuff. And you can also counter-charge.
Yeah, so this was revealed later what it was. And at first I was like, what the fuck? But basically a cavalry unit usually has counter-charge. Yeah. So if you get a charge declare on you, you... declare counter charge and then you kind of like they both units meet move a bit forward and both counter charging
and they both get the lance bonus.
That's really cool.
Cavalry seems really good in this game, that's actually
really good, especially with what is it, like the charge is 2d6 pick the highest for infantry,
yeah,
and it says something like later about like, oh, when you have swift stride you add another d6, and I'm like, is it that you roll 3d6 and you pick the highest, or you pick the 2 highest if you're cavalry?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't understand either. And then later, when they read through some special rules for Bretonians or whatever, they have like +3 and +d3 and like all this kind of shit. So it seems like cavalry is going to like go far.
Yeah, really, really far. And it also seems that you have to account for wheeling when you're charging.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, that's going to be a bit...
That's going to be a bitch.
Yeah, difficult. Because it's so hard to actually measure like the distance of an angle.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to project us out and
I think this is
compasses
the,
and
this is a big mistake though to, yeah. to be honest. Like in that was one of the best changes to the 8th edition was that you just measure point to
yeah,
point.
Yeah, I agree. And in 9th we are so yeah. used to that as well, like yeah. the shortest distance.
I mean the difference to here compared to like playing 6th or 7th is that pre-measuring is still a thing, it seems like.
Yeah.
So you will be able to measure how much you need before you roll, but that was always the issue with before, right? That you weren't allowed to measure, you just had to guess and then you had to argue about yeah. like is it
and it also says that if you fail the charge you move the full distance.
That's really cool.
That's quite good actually. Because yeah, it means that yeah. if you fuck up your charge then you're gonna get
eaten
yeah
but this is something I think that's something if I was like what would I want to go into like 3.0 for example like or take inspirations for this that would be something that I would say this would probably make the game faster and more dynamic because you're like currently there's so many situations in Knife Age for example where you're you know you declare a charge and it doesn't or a long charge and you go like oh there's no negative drawback for me and then you just like kind of shuffle your units around a little bit because you fail whereas here it's more like
Your unit's
going to
be really out of position.
Yeah, it's going to, like, whatever happens, your unit's going to end up in positions that forces the game to happen.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to be less, like, looking at each other unless you're not declaring any charge. You know?
Yeah. I think we will talk about this a little bit later, but I feel like this game is going to be more about infantry units or units, like, and many units, like, across the table, a bit like Warmaster.
Okay.
Rather than, like, in Ninth Age where you have, like, one unit and some single models.
Yeah, sure.
I feel like this game is going to be way more about like many units.
Okay.
And a bit more of like a tactical, like put one unit forward, that gets sacrificed, and then you kill something and like counter charge.
Yeah,
that's what my initial yeah. feeling is.
I mean,
but
that's, if it's like that, it would be great. Like,
it
like,
might,
that's the kind
yeah.
of game I want to play, you know?
I there's some things in here that I don't like, but there's also, that's the, maybe the impression I'm getting from
okay.
my first look at this, but we can take it as we go.
Yeah.
So there's a few other things. We've got compulsory moves. So that's just rallying stuff. Random movement still in there. It seems that fanatics are still a thing.
Okay.
Well, is what it is. And there's still stupidity tests, which I actually miss that a little.
I get a little bit of schadenfreude that the fucking Ed is going to have to roll this animosity table and stuff. Because like, that's definitely coming back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. But the stuff like that is like
yeah.
fun. And,
it's
and,
really fun.
Yeah. And I miss it. I miss
it's,
it.
To
like
me,
it,
that
yeah.
was like one of those things where, I mean, if you couldn't handle that, then you, Orcs and Goblins is just
not
the
your
army that
yeah.
you're going to play. Just like then you play something like Two Kings, which was ultra reliable, or Dwarves, and it always does exactly the same thing. But like to me, it's like if you have to just get in the Orcs and Goblin mindset when you play it, and just like, oh, now this unit is just gonna fucking run across the table, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, okay, let's see what happens.
But that's also something that I think this is a different type of game to Ninth Age.
Yeah.
Where Ninth Age is like a strategy game,
mm-hmm.
whereas this is like a fun game.
Yeah, more like an experience. But
yeah,
like, yeah,
yeah. And I think we have to be careful like how we, like what you have to play this game for the right reason.
Yeah, how you approach it, right?
Yeah.
But this has always been the issue with Warhammer before Ninth Age, is that there's so many people who don't approach it in the right way.
Yeah.
And like to me, that's why I actually didn't really attend many tournaments and stuff back in Warhammer days, because you would go to a tournament where people would be, especially in Sweden with Swedish comp and stuff, where they tried to make it into basically what Ninth Age is,
yeah.
but that's just not what Warhammer is.
Yeah.
Like it's not.
I agree.
Like
I agree.
You have to kind of take a step back and don't be so anal about it, you know.
Yeah, and I think I will probably play this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're coming over, we'll
mm-hmm.
play a game of Old World.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're going to go to a tournament, we'll probably play Ninth Age.
Yeah,
I would guess that's probably where it will end. But
yeah, most likely.
We'll see. Right. Next one.
Shooting. Was there anything really, like, different in shooting?
Yes. So we got this armor bane rule.
Oh, yeah. They reveal that later.
Yeah. We find out what it does later. But
just take now.
Yeah, but the longbows have armor bane 1,
mm-hmm.
which means that if you roll a 6 to wound,
yeah,
then you get -1 AP.
Yeah, so it's like a weaker version
of
lethal strike.
Yeah. I like it because obviously like longbows with AP 1 would be like pretty good.
Yeah.
So
like
a
knife edge.
Longbows don't have AP 1.
I think you're Sylvan.
Sylvan, yeah. But
but yeah, sure.
But I think it's like a light version of that, which
yeah.
I think is okay.
It
obviously,
is,
you're going to have to roll a few more dice, but
yeah.
it's...
Like, it's... I mean, it's obviously nice rules writing in the way that you can just go like, oh, you want this to actually be lethal strike, then it has armor bane 6 or whatever, yeah, or 5 or whatever, yeah, it is, right? But like the thing I don't like about it is, like on a longbow, I feel like, okay, it kind of makes sense. But later they reveal, like, for example, that, what is it, Grail Knights have armor bane like 1 or 2 or something. So suddenly you're like, oh, this unit has like AP this, and then sometimes AP that. And then, yeah, like you have to like roll so many other sets of dice and whatever. And you're like, just... That what I like about Lethal Strike is that it's so clear, right? Yeah. It's just like sixes, six, okay, no, it's worked, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we have a Screaming Skull Catapult. So there's lots of special rules that they've listed. So yeah, we don't know what they all do, but it does bombardment, which I assume is like some sort of stir for a rule.
Yeah, cumbersome
is obviously that you can't move and shoot.
Yeah.
Flaming attacks, magical attacks. It's got move or shoot as well. So yeah, cumbersome.
No idea what that does.
Maybe you can't stand and shoot.
Yeah, maybe.
And multiple wounds, D3 plus 1.
And Screaming Skulls is usually, like, traditionally that was panic, like, take a panic test. Yeah, yeah. And it also says that it shoots a blast template, and the multiple wounds is the thing in the bottom. So templates are back.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to have a 3-inch blast template. Is that the big one or the small one?
No, small one.
Small one, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the big one is like this.
Yeah, 5 inches, yeah. So everyone's going to have to dig out their old plastic templates.
I think I threw away so many. I think I have one set left.
I have some at home. Yeah. I'm going to go back to my parents in February, so yeah, I'll probably pick them up then. It'd be good timing.
Yeah, that's interesting. But they didn't really tell us how you actually shoot a war machine. Like, you know, do it in 8th edition where you just kind of...
Guess range or...
Because probably it's not guess range if you pre-measure, right?
Yeah.
But it's interestingly though, the strength of the Screaming Skull Catapult is 4, so that's higher.
Yeah.
So it used to be 3, right? So it's...
Okay. So it says that you're rolling to hit on ballistic skill.
Mhm.
And so I would assume that the Tomb Kings probably have the 5+10 as before, but
most likely, right? Yeah, and then they have this the ballistic skill is completely the same, other than that, like, you can go... Yeah, this was really funky, right? Where if you have ballistic skill 1, you hit on a 6.
Yeah.
And 5, you hit on a 2. That's like before.
Yeah.
But if you have, like, you can have ballistic skill 9, then it's like you hit on a 2. And if you fail the 1, then you can reroll that and hit on a 3.
Yeah.
And it's like...
But I mean, how many things are going to have ballistic skill 9? I don't know.
They're probably going to bring out some elf character that's like 10 or probably, something, yeah, right? But to me, it's like, at that point, you might as well just say that he auto-hits. Like, it's just kind of stupid rolling, you know?
Rolling a lot of dice. Yeah. So, yeah, if you... But it also... I don't know, maybe there's, like, modifiers and stuff.
Yeah, still, most likely, right?
So...
It might come into play, but I do kind of feel like... I think a better way to do it would be that it's like, if you're, you know, if you have bliss skill 6, or plus, or sort of, above 5... Then you hit on a 2 and you ignore this many modifiers.
Well, that's what it is in 9th age, right?
Exactly. And that to me makes much more sense because you don't you don't waste your time rolling. Like for example, here, if you have bliss skill 6, then so you hit on a 2 and then you reroll once that then hit on a 6. Yeah. That's like just wasted time.
Well, what I think is going to happen with this is that there's probably going to be a spell which is like plus 2 ballistic skill or something like that. So let's say you have like Pathfinders or something, or what they call Waywatchers, ballistic skill 5. And then you get plus 2 to hit. And then you'd be on like 7, and then you get to roll the dice for you miss, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I think it's in that sense it might be more elegant, but it does seem like when I look at this table, I'm like, this just seems like
a waste of time. A lot of dice. Okay, so then we've got a wound chart. It seems to be pretty much the same as before, like 4+4 strength 4 against toughness 4. Is 4+. Shrimp 3 against toughness 4 is a 5+.
Yeah, so it's the same. Except you can also reach a point where you cannot wound stuff.
Yeah, so if there's 7 difference or 6 difference, so
yeah,
if you're what are the sphinxes, or are they res 8?
They used to be res 8. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So that would mean in this table that if you're strength 2, you can't wound a sphinx, for example. So I don't know how often this is actually going to come up, to be honest.
It didn't really come up that much before.
Yeah.
The War Machines also used to have a res 7, right?
Yeah. I think this is the table from, I think, 6th and 7th edition, I think it looked like this.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, I guess we'll see. I mean, I think that's interesting. Like, it is... It makes sense, right? But most likely, things will still be around that strength 4, resilience 4, toughness 4 area, you know?
Yeah. And then we also have armor, so it's not really moving away too much from 9th age or from old Warhammer. But yeah, we also get a few special rules spoiled as well.
Yeah.
So breath weapons. So that's you're gonna get your breath weapon templates again.
Dude, dragons are gonna be amazing again.
Yeah. At last.
Yeah.
I'm happy.
This is actually a good point. I need to find an army that actually has a dragon in it, because it's
fucking... Well, Tomb Kings will have a dragon.
Yeah, that's true. But will it have a breath weapon?
Probably.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Otherwise, I'll just play warriors. I really want to play the siege guy on a dragon who just like casts all the spells and does the breath weapon. It has two of them, of course, because it's two heads. Amazing.
The question is, are you going to have to do it from the head of the model or from the base of the model?
you have like a head that is on like a little slinky that you can like extend out. You deploy him and then you...
Slinky head.
Oh man, they also say that cavalry or skirmish cavalry, they say, can fire and flee.
Yeah.
That's so kind of like Makar do now,
yeah.
I guess. Yeah,
so we saw that the Bretonnian yeomen in the later spoiler are going to be skirmish, like the cavalry.
Deploying cavalry in skirmish formation sounds like such cancer. Chaffing, you're gonna fucking put a line of cavalry bases, and they'll have 1 inch in between, and you're going to chaff... Fucking 20 inches at the table. It's gonna be such cancer. Like fucking hell.
Yeah, I mean, some things seem a bit stupid.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
Is like how like we'll you know if you were on the designing floor, like this to me would be this draft comes in. And I look at the skirmish formation and go like,
nope.
Are you fucking retarded? You're not doing this, you know?
But it also shows you like the level of like design is not as good as the Night Fish.
Yeah.
It really does show that. But yeah, we have some other rules like Iron Drakes, which were, is that Flame Forge Wardens?
Forge Wardens, yeah.
The Cinder Blast Bombs that can quick shot. So that's, I guess, standing and shooting with no penalty or something like
maybe,
that.
Yeah, maybe, or no penalty for moving or something like that. Quick to fire kind of thing, right?
But that also shows you that maybe they have two weapons.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So
those used to be such a terror, like in 8th edition. Yeah. Like it's funny, like now there's a terror again. Like there's probably the best unit in the dwarf book.
Yeah.
Well, after Grudge Busters, let's say. But like they used to be so fucking crazy. Like with their like strength 5, no penalty, shit. Like just insane.
All the bullshit.
Yeah.
And then we get... Yes, it says that as for magic, there are two categories of spells to be fired off in the shooting phase: magic missiles and magical vortexes. So there are going to be some vortexes going around.
Man.
It'll be cool if there's like the endless spells that you can use, the actual models. Because I haven't played Age of Sigmar, and I think it would be cool to have that.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting.
Going actually. Around the table. So we got a few examples. We get a fireball. Casting value 8+, range 24, 2d6, strength 4 hits with AP of 0. And flaming attacks. So this is like the, you know, pretty standard. And this one's from something called Battle Magic. And I think we will talk about the magic in a bit. And then Demonology, we've got Vortex of Chaos. So it's a small 3-inch template.
Mm-hmm.
Place it within 15 inches of the caster. Whilst in play, the template is treated as dangerous terrain. It moves d6 inches in a random direction during every start of turn subphase. And anyone moving through the template... suffers d6 plus 1 strength 3 hits with AP 0.
So this to me is like again showing that magic might not be as crazy as it was in 8th edition, because these kind of vortices in 8th edition was like take a test or die, and now it's like you take d6 plus 1 strength 3 hits. So I think that's probably good.
I also like that this, it doesn't bounce through things, it's just on the table.
Yeah.
And if you move through it, then you take the hits.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's
it's so much more reasonable, because that like made such problems
like
with
Purple Sun bouncing down the whole side of the army.
Exactly.
And
that was just stupid.
And I like random direction stuff again. Like you'll have to roll a dice for the direction, and that's cool. And I'm gonna have to dig out my scatter dice.
I've saved the scatter dice because I'm like, this is my favorite die.
Alright, so the next one is combat. So the combat phase is divided into 4 steps. Like choose who fights, calculate result, break test and pursuit. So pretty much as you would expect.
Yeah, same as
but
as
it's
now.
This is also that you take all the break tests for all the units and then you do all the pursuit afterwards. So that's quite interesting.
You do?
Yeah, well it says that it's...
Oh, okay. But I wonder if it's... But I think that what they mean here, I think, is that you would choose one unit, fight, calculate result, break test, pursue, choose another unit. Maybe.
It might be that cycle, right?
But that's unclear. Yeah. Like, it's not... we don't know. But I think it's still, there's other things that are really interesting in this article, right? Because this one, or is this the one where they talk about how the brake tests and stuff work?
Maybe, yeah. So firstly, the first thing is the only the first rank of an engaged unit can fight.
Yeah. I think it says later, it's like if you have maybe spears or something, maybe you fight in the second rank.
However, a unit with a wider fighting rank than its opponent can attack with every model in that rank.
Yeah. So it also, so basically, like if you have a wide unit and you get charged by a small unit, you still get like all the attacks on the side. But it does also say later that supporting attacks, which are attacks that are not in base contact, so those that are wider, only ever get one attack. So if you have like a Swordmaster unit, you're not going to get like two attacks for all the guys on the side. You're probably
but
just
going to
get
one. That's basically the same as Ninth Age, but you actually get to attack with everyone in the front rank.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you're 10 wide and they're 5 wide, then you get 10 attacks.
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting.
I think it's definitely really interesting.
Well, it sort of incentivizes you to go wide, right?
Yeah, which is, I think, will probably make the armies appear more like armies, right? Because then you're incentivized to have wide units across the table. But the problem is that then you're going to have to wheel when you charge. And I'm pretty sure you're going to, like, there's going to be some really janky situations where somebody can take, like, a cavalry character and put him, like, on a corner of a wide unit. And then he goes, like, well, you can't even reach me if you charge because your wheel is too long. So now I can just stand there and then move past you. And it's like, that's going to be bullshit, right?
Yeah, maybe. But it's difficult to see like where the problems are, but I think you have to kind of see it in a bit more of a like a casual game, rather than trying to like.
But this is what I mean.
Break it before you even see the rules.
But what I mean is like, you know, the same people that take their single models and then they like put them at the edge of the table so you can't like charge them in some weird situation that. Yeah. Like I'm sure that there's gonna be that kind of situation here and. You know, if you play against those people, you're going to be like, oh.
At the Ninth Age, kind of, the rules are written to actually stop bullshit like that happening.
For the most part,
Okay, so we still have initiative. The model with the highest initiative strikes first. Charging, bonus for charging, and you also get a bonus for hitting in the flank of the rear for agility.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
That's interesting. He says there could also be a situation in which a lumbering stone troll with initiative 1 may find itself striking second on the charge against the swordmaster of initiative 6.
Yeah, which
makes sense. So that means that you're going to get probably more than one initiative for charging.
Yeah. Yeah, which is also I think better than what we have right now because charging doesn't matter so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in 3.0 they might tweak that a little bit. We'll see.
Yeah, sure.
So, weapon skill. I think this is also the same table as previously.
Yeah, so it's different from Knife Age, I think, because you have to be, what is it, more than double to hit on a 5, for example.
Yeah,
and in Knife Age, it's more like, what, 4 difference.
4 difference, yeah. So, if your weapon skill 3, you only start hitting on 5s against weapon skill 7.
Yeah.
If your weapon skill... Yeah, so it's 5 difference, right?
No, it's more than double.
More than double.
Yeah. So like 4, it's 9, right?
Yeah, so if you're weapon skill 2, you hit weapon skill 4 on a 4 plus, but you hit weapon skill 5 on a 5 plus.
Yeah, whereas if you have weapon skill 5, there's nothing that you hit on a 5 plus.
Yeah, because you can't get more than double,
So I think this is the same table as it was back in 8th edition and before.
Yeah.
And if you're 1 better, then you start hitting on 3 plus. And I think if you're double, then you hit on 2 plus or something? Yeah, more than double, I think.
So weapon skill 4...
Yeah, weapon skill 4 hits weapon skill 2 on 3s, but weapon skill 5 hits weapon skill
2 on 2s. Yeah.
So I think that's the same as it was.
I don't know which I prefer.
I think that I kind of like the Knife Edge system because it's a bit easier to to calculate. Because you have like set differences, but in the end I think it's very similar. Kind of like I think in this table... Once you look at it, you're like, well, it's very difficult to not be hit, basically, with this table. Yep. Basically, most of the time, you're going to hit on 4 plus or better most of the time. Right?
Yeah, 5s is difficult to engineer.
Yeah, exactly. You're most likely not going to have the parry Necroguard block that's just like, oh, you hit me on 6s, you idiot.
So, calculating combat results, they give us a little table here telling us what happens. So... I think it's quite similar to Ninth Age. You get unsaved wound is 1 point, rank bonus plus 1 point, but there's no cap. At least
it doesn't here. Yeah.
One for a standard, one for a battle standard, one for a flank attack, 2 for a rear, 1 for high ground. I haven't seen that in a while.
Exactly. What will that actually mean? Does that mean like charging off a high ground? Because that's what it used to be, right? Like you got plus 1 because you went off the hill.
That was in Ninth Age. But
no, I think this was also wasn't it eighth edition as well? I don't know. Anyway. But or maybe like, but this would be really weird if it's like literally the point you're standing on and you're like, yeah, but like, you know, this like part of the table is behind. Yeah.
There's those like old tables at Games Workshop, yeah, which was just like a big hill.
Yeah, rolling
and then
hills.
Like if you were on one side, you would always be on the high ground.
And I mean, if you're thinking about it as like simulating a battle, then that does make kind of sense, right? Because like being even on a slight slope is very beneficial. Right?
Yeah, I mean, now in ninth age, you're only getting the charge bonus for being on a hill, like the reroll.
Yeah.
But I think this is small. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's just overly complex.
Yeah, that's fair.
So overkill, I guess that's for a challenge.
Yeah.
And then other bonuses. So it's pretty much the same as before, yeah, and it's pretty similar to ninth age.
I think the break test though is very different.
This is a really big change, and it's why I think it's going to be very much like lines of like units, because okay, so when it's the same as ninth age, same as old version of Warhammer. So if you fail your break test, so you have a discipline value, I guess leadership value.
Yeah, sure.
And if you roll higher than your leadership, then the unit breaks and flees.
Mm-hmm.
If your modified roll,
yeah, so with the like with the combat stuff,
combat score is higher. So if you fail, then you fall back, but in good order.
Yeah.
So that means that you move back a bit, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably, I guess I don't know
if they said how much it is, but maybe it's like a D6 or whatever.
Or maybe it's like the amount that you lost combat by or something like that.
But you get pushed back, So, and of course, I think this is the thing that's interesting, because if you pass the test, even modified, you still move back. You still do give ground.
Yeah.
So then you move back a small distance. Whereas if you fall back in good order, then it's, I think, from what I understand, like something like 2d6 and you move the unit back a lot, but you're not you don't just die.
Yeah.
And then I think the person winning can then choose either to like follow up, to like re-engage, or just stand still and stuff like that. And I think later, in a later one, it becomes clear that you don't count as charging when you re-engage.
You don't?
I don't think so.
I thought you did.
Because I thought so when I read this one, but I think when they talked about cavalry later, like the Bretonians, it seemed to me like they don't get all the bonuses again, but I don't know.
We can talk about it, but when we see it. But for me, I think this is sort of telling me that you're going to have like lines of armies and like trying to like push people a bit and like move them, push them back, and then counter charge in the flanks and
also because it's random, right? You won't you won't be able to to really know like exactly where your opponent's unit's gonna be, because they charge like your unit and you're like, okay, you push it forward, as you say, because otherwise if you have like a line like a knife edge, then they're just gonna go through.
Yeah.
So you need to have some units.
Many units protecting them.
Yeah.
So that if they're coming, if they're pushing through, then you can charge them in the flanks.
Yeah,
or,
exactly.
Or so. I feel like this is lending to like a battle lines.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I guess we'll see.
We'll see.
Of course, there's always the risk that there, you know, you could build like a crazy lord that just goes on and kills armies on his own.
Probably.
Like.
And then you have, like you can still, if you win and they follow you, it says that you can restrain, so you can pass leadership test to avoid pursuing, you can follow up, so re-enter combat. Or you can pursue if they're fleeing.
Yeah, and that's the same as before, where it's like if you like a knife edge. Like if you roll higher, then you just kill the unit.
Exactly. And we have a few combat spells that we've been given. One is from Battle Magic. It's called Hammer Hand. So
basically, you do damage while in combat.
2d3, strength 4 hits, AP 2.
Yeah.
It's pretty good, I think.
Yeah,
it's very small.
Exactly. Amount. Again, we're seeing that the magic seems overall very toned down compared to what it was in 8th edition, at least.
Yeah, so it's basically like 4 strength, 4 hits, AP 2.
Yeah, exactly. But that might, you know, that could make the difference. Yeah. Right? So
I mean, it's maybe some combat score, right? So if it's about like winning combat, pushing back, then these things are maybe quite useful just to edge a combat. We have a dark magic one. A single enemy model that the caster is engaged in combat with suffers a strength 3 hit with multiple wounds 3 and no armor save. But you can take ward saves.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. It's like the finger of death. It's like...
Yeah. But it's only strength 3?
Yeah, exactly. So it's... It's so very random.
Good against elves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Good against elf characters.
Yeah.
And the necromancer goes like,
whoop. And so multiple wounds three. I mean, that's so pretty...
Probably just like auto-kills a character
yeah.
If they don't have wards or whatever.
Yeah, but that's kind of crazy in some ways, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you have to stop it or your character might die.
Yeah, but it might be, if your character is like not an elf, right? They're going to have to like roll a six to yeah. wound them and yeah, stuff. Yeah. So it's very, yeah,
but,
it's very random.
But could it also be that characters have more hit points than three?
Maybe.
I don't know.
That would be interesting. I think one thing we can take away from this is that you only ever flee if you fail naturally.
Natural, like which if means, you just spend eight, yeah. then it's actually hard to flee.
Yeah, so like most likely, from my perspective, I think you will... probably end up in situations where you really do have to grind out. Like maybe steadfast yeah. is not the thing, but you will still end up grinding out the mauls.
And this is why I think it's going to be like more like yeah. infantry lines mm-hmm. rather than single models.
Yeah, exactly. Because like currently, well, in 8th edition and 9th age, it's very much like you just need to go in one turn and make sure you win by a lot and yeah. then you just win the game, right?
Yeah.
Whereas here it seems like of course you can be just unlucky and then
yeah, run away.
But most of the time, you will most likely just have to like really fall kill back. All yeah. everybody.
They're going to be falling back yeah. and falling back and falling back yeah, and falling exactly. back, rather than like having like a combat where you put like five buffs on.
Yeah, exactly. And then just you clip wipe, two corners.
You, yeah, like... clip like a monster in a chariot, yeah. and then you just wipe a unit.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I think is quite cool.
Yeah, I think that's
it's
good.
Different, right?
Yeah, it's weird. It will feel very different, I yeah. think.
This is a cool artwork.
Yeah, this is one of my favorites, actually. It's
is
like
this an old one?
Yeah, this is an old one. This is a like an Empire army on one side and a Beastmen army on the other side. It's going to be difficult.
So what's this?
It has to... I mean, that looks like... It could be... Like, it looks like more like a Demon Prince, because I think this artwork is from like the first version of Beastmen, like in 6th edition.
Okay.
I think that's when they got their first book.
I yeah, believe. So right now we're looking at the morale and psychology. Yeah.
Like nowadays, I would say that's a Gortark, right? But like...
Yeah, maybe.
But I think I think what it was supposed to be was more like some kind of Demon Prince.
Yeah.
When the factions were united.
Did Gortaks have like...
Because you can see weapons? Some warriors in the back here as well.
Yeah, so I mean maybe beast herds will be combined with warriors again.
I don't think so. I think it's just artwork.
You think?
But okay, well,
but back in eighth, in 6th edition and 8th edition, it, yeah.
Like to me, one thing that's like, again, from like what you can build and when you play like a Warhammer game, this like combined Chaos Army is super cool, right?
Yeah.
Like you have a unit of Beastmen, you have a unit of Warriors, they're all like worshipping Nurgle or whatever.
Let's get some Khorne Gauls. You know, yeah, exactly. Warriors Army.
Like that would be super cool, but. Yeah. I don't know if that's gonna happen. Like if they, it's kind of like that in Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
Like in the sense that you have like instead of having like, I mean, you of course have like the warrior faction, whatever, but you also have like the Nurgle faction, right? And then they can take lots of different Nurgle things that all aren't necessarily only warriors, yeah. or whatever.
But it, I mean, we're just looking at the artwork, right? Yeah. And we're trying to like make some inference into what yeah. we're gonna see, but it could be very cool to have these combined armies yeah. again.
Definitely, but if I had to guess, that's just old artwork and it doesn't have any implication. That's yeah. what I would guess.
Yeah, so they're telling us again about the breaking and fleeing
mm-hmm.
and giving ground.
This is also really old artwork. Yeah. This is like the artwork from the old Warriors of Chaos box when they were like these monkey warriors, like they were kind of hunched over, if you yeah. remember. Then this I remember, this is like one of the first boxes I got as a kid, and they has like lots of funky warriors standing with on a like hill with spikes and shit.
So 2d6 inches, so it's saying that when you flee 2d6 inches.
Yeah.
You pivot to avoid impassable terrain.
That's super weird.
That's a
so,
bit weird.
So currently you bounce through, right?
Yeah.
But so I think what this means is that your unit will never like magically go through stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like you will
you have
flee,
to go around.
You will like actually
yeah.
move it, right? And that's really interesting.
It's okay, but it's going to be a bit weird
wonky.
On the table.
It's going to be super wonky.
Yeah.
Also, it's not clear if you run, like if you flee through your own, like friendly units or not.
Yeah.
I guess that...
If they run through a friendly okay. unit, then they're safe.
Okay, yeah. So they probably just pass through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then that unit can get charged.
Yeah. I mean, that's like
that's
now.
That's not like now, right?
Yeah.
So it's falling back in good order. You can... You discard the lower of the two dice when you flee, and you
yeah.
automatically rally at the end of that move.
Yeah.
So it's 2d... So it's 2d6.
Pick the highest.
Pick the highest, and then you move back
yeah.
that amount.
Yeah, exactly. And it, this to me seems to indicate, right, that you won't have, like right now, where we both roll the dice, and if I roll higher, I just kill you, we don't check where you go. Here it seems more like, if you flee, then you move the unit, and as you say, if it then goes through your friendly units, then you can't catch, even if you roll higher in the beginning.
Which is maybe why I'm like, there's going to be battle lines, and then the second unit's behind.
Yeah, sure.
So that if your units flee, then they will flee through, rally, and then you have your own unit to like follow up, which makes it quite, it could be quite cool, like infantry game.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, like one question. So do you think that, so let's say I have a unit and then there's an impassable terrain, like let's say 20 inches behind, okay, right, directly behind, perpendicular to the unit.
Yeah.
And then we're fighting and my unit flees.
Yeah.
Does my unit go directly backwards, like towards the impassable terrain, or does it go off at an angle?
So here, it's to me, it seems like you would go directly toward impassable, and then once you reach it, you have to pivot and like move around it. That to me seems like what this indicates. Because it doesn't talk about like you have to have a clear like line to the end of the board, but it does say you have to move around obstacles, right? So I would imagine, I mean, we'll see, of course, but I would imagine it's very much like you move directly backwards, and then if there's an obstacle, then your unit has to pivot, move sideways, and then pivot back.
But at what point do you start to wheel?
Yeah, I have no idea, dude.
Yeah.
That's very unclear. As you, especially if it's perpendicular, right? Like, it makes sense if it's like you're hitting the impassable on an angle.
At an edge, and then you just wheel a bit to get around it. Yeah, but if it's like perpendicular.
And do you like wheel back once you're around the impassable? Or do you just like, if you're perpendicular, do you go to impassable, turn 90 degrees and go the other?
I think
I would love it if that's not clear in the rules, because seems like typical Games Workshop writing.
Yeah, but this is what I'm a bit worried about, is that there's going to be stupid shit like this.
Yeah, it's like, who do they hire to write these things sometimes? I mean, maybe we're wrong, right? But like, there's a good chance.
Maybe there's some clarification, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So also it tells us that if you're giving ground, you step back 2 inches.
Yeah, okay.
Again, terrain permitting.
Yeah, so maybe, what happens if you're... Do you just stay in place?
You should probably stop if you touch an impassable.
Put your dwarves in front of the impassable and go like, fuck you, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, but that sort of makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Got your back against the wall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So psychology, it says that there's some classic effects of back. So fear, terror, stupidity, animosity.
Yeah.
Frenzy, unbreakable, stubborn.
It's gonna be some
and
nice
hatred.
Unbreakable dwarf armies in your future.
Yeah. but it's not as good in this rule, because most things are always innately stubborn.
Yeah, exactly. Like
always
steadfast. Yeah, right? Exactly. So I guess the difference might be that maybe if you're unbreakable, you don't get pushed back. I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
Although to be honest, it would be better probably if you always just did the 2 inch backwards if you're unbreakable or something, if you lose, right?
But,
like,
I mean,
you still move, but we'll see.
We'll see how it works, but at least like things are not going to flee as much as possible.
Yeah.
As much as currently, right?
Yeah. Fear is very much the same. If you fail the fear test, you get minus one to hit. But one thing is different,
Yeah. If an enemy with lower unit strength wishes to charge a fear-causing unit, it must take a leadership test or its charge will fail. Already in combat with skeleton warriors causing fear.
So every kind of like an edition, all undead will cause fear.
Leadership test or suffer minus one to hit.
Yeah, so that's the same as an edition. But
skeletons are causing fear.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
So that will be really weird. And I mean, that will definitely make undead armies like have a very good high, like a strength, right?
Yeah.
Like currently, you know, like skeletons are just kind of shit, right? Yeah. But if you bring like a big block of skeletons, then sometimes your opponent's army just won't do what they want.
Especially
to do.
If
that's really cool.
Parry or something is a thing.
Yeah.
Then minus one to hit plus parry is pretty good.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that works. But yeah, you said unit strength.
Yeah, that was back in 6th and 7th edition. You got like basically you had like outnumbering, which wasn't in the combat score thing. So
no.
I don't know how unit strength. Maybe unit strength is simply how many moles is in your unit.
How many wounds or whatever.
Yeah. Like how it interacts though isn't completely clear. Because
if
you remember back in 7th edition and 6th edition, if you had a higher unit strength and you were fear causer, then your opponent always auto broke.
Yeah.
Which was crazy. Which is also when it's so funny when you read the old army books. It's like skeleton warriors cost so many points only because of this rule, and then you go to the special and like and tomb guard, it costs like less than a skeleton warrior because they had like a cap on how many unit. You're like, okay.
I mean, it looks like we're gonna get the points next week, so or some
like an army selection at least. Yeah, maybe they'll have an example.
Yeah, well, that'll be interesting to see. So terror, if you get charged by a terror, you have to take a test. So same. And
they give this -1 penalty for discipline test in combat.
Yeah. So that's quite cool. Yeah. So it's a bit like Ninth Age.
Yeah. But I think that's very
More units are getting fear. And then we have a profile for a Dragon Ogre Shaggoth.
Mm-hmm.
So, Armor Bane 2. So that's like, I guess it's... We don't know if strength is related to armor penetration in this game.
That's not... Yeah, true.
Or maybe it's... Maybe there's no armor penetration in this game.
Maybe. But that was weird because like the spell before, or like one of the spells said something like, oh, you take strength 4 hits.
With AP 2, right?
AP 2.
Yeah.
But maybe normal attacks have this like innate, like above strength 3, it's -1 or whatever. Yeah.
So we'll see. But armor bane 2. So I guess if you roll a 6, then you get -2 armor.
Yeah, and he's already strength 6.
Yeah.
Then he has Armored Hide, which I assume...
Hide 2, probably +2 armor, right?
Most likely, yeah. Close order,
that he has to be in.
It will always say either close, skirmish, or open,
And sorcerer weapons, that used to be +1 strength.
+1 strength magical attacks back in the day, but we'll see.
Immune to psychology, so probably can't flee. Large target, that's like gigantic.
Yeah, I guess so.
You used to get +1 to hit against large target in the old rules.
Oh.
Again, with shooting attacks, I think. Oh, okay. I think.
That'd be really interesting. Well, also, fucking terrible if you can cannon time.
Stomp attacks d3 +1, so no longer d6.
I really like this.
I like this change, actually. Yeah.
Also because you can specify, right? Like, it's really nice that not to be like, oh, it's a monster, so I have to like always design around the fact that it has
stomps. D6,
Whereas now you could go like, this monster doesn't like getting his tippy toes wet with blood, so it's just only stomp 1.
Yeah. So yeah, we have Storm Call, which is and a Quickening Storm, which are two special rules. You probably assume that it's some sort of lightning thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It used to get like, if you got hit by a lightning attack, you got angry.
Yeah. And it was only lightning attack in the game was the cannon
from Thunderbolt spell.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah. Path of Heavens, or what it was called. Yeah.
But we'll see. Yeah. So, I mean, okay, Profile, Movement 7, Weapon Skill 6, Ballistic Skill 2, like why they have that, I don't know. Strength 6, Toughness 5, Wound 6, Initiative 4, Attacks 5, Leadership 9.
This is very, very similar to what it used to be. I think he changed something, maybe like got an attack or something, or got a strength, but it's very, very similar.
Very similar, right?
Yeah.
I have two of these, so it could be fun to play. So we've got another spell, Battle Lust. So until the end of this turn, the target friendly unit gains Frenzy and Hatred.
Yeah, so Frenzy gives +1 attack.
Yes.
And you get immunity from fear and terror. But it says above here, it says something that's really crazy. Yeah. That's like, you must always charge
if able.
I can never choose to flee from a charge. Yeah. Like, cause like, I mean, so wait, would you just go currently? It's like you take your like, let's say medium charge, and that's when you need to take this. Yeah. If it says always charge, like maximum charge.
Max charge, fuck you. Here we go.
But then you move your fail distance as well. So you get those units are just, it's going to be like a bomb, right? Yeah. Like you can't control them. You're just going to go like, here you go.
But it's quite cool though. And this is what I'm talking about, why I think it's going to be like a battle line type game. Because these sorts of things are going to happen all the time.
Yeah.
So you're going to be pushing like a unit forwards.
Mm.
And it's going to fail its charge, and then stuff is going to counter charge, and then you need things to like
come to follow up.
And I think it could be quite cool.
Yeah.
And also, there's also a little thing here. It says hatred in brackets all enemies.
Yeah.
So this is telling me that there's going to be those old hatred rules come
exactly.
back.
Yeah, exactly. Like
dwarves hating goblins, like dark elves hating high elves.
Isn't it like dwarves hating elves and goblins hating dwarves or something like that? Like elves. Yeah, it was really stupid, but it's pretty funny at the same time.
But it meant that some matchups were just like unplayable.
Yeah, like completely fucked. Yeah. Oh man, please let me hate all elves.
Let's see. I hope not. Do dwarves used to hate all elves?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass. I know that. Well, there was definitely
a dwarf or goblin thing.
I'm pretty sure. It was like weird, right? Because like I think goblins feared elves, right? And they hated dwarves or something like that. But I don't remember if dwarves hated goblins only or something else. Or,
Okay. So the next one is magic. So how magic brings sparkle to the battlefield. This is, I think this is new, right? I haven't seen this one before. This artwork.
Or at least it's recent. It could also be from like end times or whatever. Yeah.
It's like a high elf mage with like a book.
Yeah, like everything's very monochrome.
Yeah. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
So Wizardry 101. So there's I think quite a lot of changes here. So
yeah, first of all the paths are completely different.
Yeah.
From back in 8th edition or whatever. You have bow magic, dark magic, demonology, elementalism, high magic, illusion, necromancy, and then they say wag magic as well. You're like, why is that in the main book? But
well I think it's because there's no colleges of magic, right? Because
it's set before the colleges before of magic. Before Teclis went and had his lecturing tour,
Exactly. Which I think that's the lecturer.
Yeah, which I think that could be really cool because those paths could have completely different flavors from what they have right now or had with the Winds of Magic.
Yeah, but we also seen some like Nehekaran spells. So it seems like you guys, the Tomb Kings, are going to get their own lore of magic.
Exactly. Which, I mean, kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, and we've seen some like battle magic spells. Yeah. Was that Frenzy one? Was that battle magic? Dark magic.
Yeah, the battle magic was like the iron fists in combat.
Yeah, hammer hand or something, exactly. Right? So,
and I think battle magic was also like fireball and stuff like that, but I'm not sure. Maybe that was elementalism.
So this is quite interesting.
Yeah.
I think the fireball was battle magic.
Yeah.
But orcs have their own lore, but maybe that means that other factions will get access to.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe something like ogres or whatever. Yeah. Which could make sense, right?
Yeah. But that's quite a big change.
Yeah.
But you also like high magic, for example, which was classically like the high elves and the lizard men. Like that's one of the main paths now. Was it lores? I can't remember.
I think lores is a Warhammer thing. Yeah. Path is the
knife edge. Yeah. So each lore has 7 spells. Mm-hmm. One is a signature spell that's always available.
Yeah.
Every magic user has a level running from 1 to 4. The higher the level, the more puissant the wizard and the more spells they know at the start of the game. So I really hope you don't have to roll for spells.
Yeah.
That was the most fucking dumb thing.
Yeah, it was so annoying. Just because it's like, for example, we were talking before about like in the Tomb King lore, there was one spell that was amazing, gave you +1 attack to like everybody on the battlefield. and if you don't roll it, it was like, oh, okay, so suddenly my army is now like half as good as normal.
So I hope that that's not a thing, but we'll see.
Yeah.
There's different types of spells.
I think
we talked about this already.
So then I think here they talk about how you cast, right?
Yeah.
So this is the part where I'm like, I don't really like, because basically you take 2d, you say you want to cast a spell, it has a casting value, you always roll 2d6, and you add the level of the caster,
right?
Or whatever other special.
So as an example, like the battle list is a 9.
Yeah,
so that's quite high.
Yeah,
so if you're level 2, you need to roll a 7 on 2 dice.
So basically 50%. That's like kind of difficult, right?
If you're a master or like a level 4, then it's a 5 on 2 dice.
Yeah, so that's most likely. Yeah. So like level 4, there's going to be a huge difference then between level 4s and other ones. And basically, if you roll double 1, you miscast. So it's no longer like irresistible force as it was in 8th edition. And the miscast table is pretty wild, I have to say.
let's read it.
You roll 2d6. So if you roll 2 to 4, you dimensionally cascade. You take the big 5-5 fireball tip, put it on the wizard. Everybody takes a straight 10
hit. AP4.
it, like, imagine you're level 2. You just wanted to cast Battlelust. You know?
But that's cool. Like, I'm missing this in 9th.
This would be so wild, because at least like in 8th edition there was like a bit of a like risk reward, right? Where you say, okay, I only use this many dice, so my chance of miscasting is lower. Where now it's like, oh, every time you cast a spell, it's always kind of the same chance of blowing up. Like,
So the next one is Calamitous Detonation. So it's the same, but a 3-inch template and only strength 6 AB2.
This is rolling 5-6. Then on a 7 is Careless Conjuration. He mispronounces it, the thing, and he takes a strength 4 hit. So that's
fine.
That's on
a 7, right?
Yeah.
But like 5 and 6 is like a big template, so it's quite likely.
Yeah, 5 and 6 is like three unit is fucked.
Yeah. 8-9, barely control power. The wizard manages to control the magic, but at the expense of great power. The spell is cast at its casting value. For dispel attempts, however, you cannot attempt to cast any more spells this turn.
Yeah, I mean this is also interesting, right? Because that adds like a chance of success.
Yeah, right. And it also means that, let's say that you, because you're casting your spells in different phases.
Yeah.
So if you're casting a movement spell,
yeah,
and you miscast, and then you can't cast your combat spell,
yeah, exactly,
then you have a problem.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the last
10,
one.
Yeah, 10 to 12 is Power Drain. A deafening boom, the summon's magic is unleashed, an unnatural calm descends. So you get perfect invocation.
Which I think is, that's going to be like, yeah, you can't dispel it.
Exactly. I think that's, you. They say, I think that you get it on double six also.
Okay.
But then you can't cast any more spells. Like, is it? It says, however, you cannot attempt to cast any more spells for the remainder of the current turn. I think that might be every wizard.
The whole turn, yeah.
Yeah, for every wizard, yeah, not just this one, which is pretty wild.
So we're looking at this and thinking it's a bit crazy, but yeah, actually it's not. Because we're used to rolling like up to five dice for a spell.
Yeah.
But this is only on two dice.
Yeah.
So you have to roll a six and a six.
Yeah, for
a miscast.
Yeah, or not for perfect invocation.
Yeah, yeah, or like a one and a one.
One and one for miscast.
So it's actually quite unlikely.
Yeah.
Because
it's like one in 36.
Yeah. So we're normally rolling many dice for spells, yeah, right? So it's more likely that you're going to get a triple or a double.
Yeah, exactly.
But then this is only 2d6. Yeah. So I actually think it's quite okay.
Yeah, exactly. It will be very random, like, yeah, when it occurs.
It will be a bit random, yeah.
And I think what is really interesting is that when you dispel, you can choose to dispel if you're a wizard within 24.
Yeah, you have to be within, yeah, range, which is cool as well. Yeah,
I like that also. But the thing that's funny is that you can miscast your dispelling. So if you roll double one when you dispel, you might pull up. I love that's really cool. Like, that also, I think that brings like the story of the game, yeah, in much more into it, right? Whereas, because it's not just purely mathematical, you're, yeah, like, look at your wizard, you're like, can I afford it? How important is this spell? And you're, yeah, like, oh, I need to stop it, and like, boom, so it destroys your units.
But this is gonna make so many like funny moments, I, yeah, feel like, as well. So I'm looking forward to that, even though, yeah, it's gonna, definitely, be a bit random.
Yeah,
it's like, gonna be fun to play.
I think what it doesn't say here, right, is again like, how many spells can you cast? Can you, yeah, like, if you have a sect, do you, if you know four spells,
can you cast them all?
Yeah, can you just like every turn, yeah, every phase, just cast a spell? Of course, it's quite risky.
Yeah.
But like, or is there like a resource management system? That's not really.
Yeah, it's not clear, like, right? But we'll see. Yeah. And then if you roll a double six for dispelling, then you automatically dispel. So I guess you can, yeah, try and, if they get a double six for casting, there's like a 1 in 36 chance that you can stop it.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's see. Okay, so fated dispel once per turn. What's this? Hang on.
I think this is without a wizard. Like, you can choose to dispel once per turn if you don't have a wizard.
I see, in, yeah, range. Yeah, so it's unmodified. So, yeah, basically you can try it once per turn.
Yeah.
So that makes sense, actually, because, yeah, like, if you're not in range, then you can try it once per turn to, yeah, dispel the spell. But you don't get the bonus that you would, yeah, for... Exactly.
For level,
yeah, 4. So I guess, like, a level 4 also gets plus 4 to, yeah, dispel as well.
And I think this is really cool in the sense that it's, like, it makes you invest in magic, or, like, investing in magic is really powerful, whereas like one thing that's a drawback currently with how this, or like our magic phase works, and also how it worked in 8th edition, was that the magic phase always kind of happened, right? Like, yeah, and then it was more like you just take like just enough magic to utilize it, whereas here it seems like if you have many wizards, they're going to be casting a shit ton of spells, yeah, and you, if you have no wizards, then you're going to be at the mercy of your opponent because you can't dispel, right? Yeah. So you kind of want to invest a bit, or maybe, yeah, or investing a lot is going to have a good payoff and, yeah, stuff. So
it seems to, like, the more that you invest, the more you get.
Yeah.
Whereas in 9th age,
there's limits. Yeah.
Like, speaking of this last tournament that I played in with 11 spells, I just put way too much in magic.
Yeah. Not, wait, 11 spells?
Yeah. I had two masters and an adept.
Okay.
Basically.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah,
but also like, but I have done the opposite with my last Vermis Swarm list, where I have like six spells, but I have channel 7 because I have the item where I have channel 4, and then I can kill slaves in a unit
and get extra dice. Guys,
oh,
yeah,
fantastic! It's so fun. So much fun, dude. Every turn you're like 4 dice.
All right, and then we've got the first of the wizards, like stat lines and rules. I actually quite like this model.
Yeah, it's the new handmaid,
damsel, handmaiden of the lady. Ah, because it's two different types. Okay. Yeah. So there's two different stat lines. Prophetess is weapon skill 4 and 2 attacks.
Yeah, you have 2 attacks as a wizard.
Yeah, apparently. It's 25 by 25 millimeters.
Okay, which kind of indicates that infantry is all going to, yeah, be at least on 25s, I think.
Equipment, hand weapon, unit size 1. So a level 3 wizard or a level 1 wizard. And you can choose battle magic, elementalism, and illusion.
Because this seems to indicate that you not every faction will be able to go up to level 4, right? Because here it seems like if you play Britannia, you're probably going to be capped at level 3. Oh no, okay, you can... it's that it starts on level 3, the big
so
one.
So
okay.
Then you can get a level 4 for 30 points.
That's
seems cheap.
Yeah, seems good.
A level 2 for 30 points.
Yeah, so basically a wizard level is worth 30 points, I guess.
Yeah. And then you get magic items. So they have some special rules. Aura of the Lady, Blessing of the Lady, Lore of the Lady.
Mm-hmm. So Lore of the Lady might be different...
Could be a magic lore, right?
Yeah. Which seems weird after the... Yeah, well, maybe each faction will have a lore, I guess.
Yeah. Magical attacks, magic resistance 2,
and
Shield of the Lady.
Just like this kind of shit, so it can stand behind, probably, or whatever.
Sounds pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Then we've got a Unicorn. 40 by 60.
That's weird.
That's quite a big base.
Yeah. I think Cavalry is on 30 by 60.
Yeah.
Is what they, or at least the Grail Knights, that they have the war later.
So that probably means if you're on a Unicorn, you can't go in the unit.
Yeah. So probably that's like a going on your own type of mount.
Yeah. And you get plus 1 wound if you're on the Unicorn. Movement 10.
Yeah.
You get counter charge, so I guess that's like a cavalry thing.
Yeah.
It gets the stomp stuff, it gets swift stride, magical attacks, it gets armored hide 1. 6 plus armor save, maybe?
It's difficult to see why you would take this.
Yeah, I don't know why you'd want to.
If you can't go in a unit, it's
run your wizard around. Beguiling Aura could be like a debuff thingy.
Yeah.
I mean, I once ran a Wood Elf wizard on a Unicorn,
mm-hmm.
but that was back when you had the high magic tokens and you could like absorb damage.
Yeah.
That was quite good. But yeah, so we get a little bit of information about this as well. So it says the Shield of the Lady ability allows her to seek sanctuary in the back of a rank.
Yeah, so stand behind.
So I guess, can she do that if she has a Unicorn?
But it will be mismatching bases, right? Yeah. So that's the question of how does that work?
And how that works in the game.
Will you
right?
even be able to join the unit, or is it kind of like
just
an
put
edition?
It sideways?
Yeah. Is it like an eighth edition where you or knife edge where you go like on the edge of the unit, like the side, but you still join it? Or
Who knows?
And then they show us Hammerhand again. That's the same they've already showed us.
So she says, as a battle magic user, her signature spell is Hammerhand. So I guess this is the signature spell for battle magic. And we've seen it already. It's a 2d3 shrink 4 hits 1.
Yeah.
And then we get another example of some signature spells from the other paths.
Yeah.
So we have Illusion, Glittering Robe.
Yeah, which is like minus 1 to hit.
Yeah.
But also the unit. So it's like she can join a unit, stand in the back rank, cast minus 1 to hit on the entire unit. Yeah. That seems really powerful.
If this spell is cast, the effects of any other enchantment previously cast on them expire.
This is a general thing for all enchantments and all hexes, is that you can only ever have one spell active.
Which I like.
I think that's really good as well. Because again, it makes it so that you don't have these situations where you're like just pushing everything into one place on the table.
Yeah.
So your magic is also going to have to spread out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be very interesting to see this, because it's also very different to Ninth Age, but I like the change. And then the last one, Storm Call, which is an elementalism signature spell. So 12 inches until your start of your next turn subphase, the target enemy suffers minus 1 modifier to its movement initiative characteristics.
Yeah.
I mean...
That doesn't seem as good as minus 1 to hit, but...
No, but it's...
Something, I guess.
So 7 plus.
So 7 is going to be really easy to cast if you're a high level wizard, right?
Yeah.
So this is the thing, right? Like, if you can cast all your, if you
all
don't
your
even
spells.
Have to choose,
if you cast
then
you all
might
your spells,
then
you
maybe
well.
You, yeah, maybe you'll do this also.
Yeah.
But if you only can cast, let's say, 4 spells, and you have like 7 to pick from, maybe this one is not the one.
The feeling that I'm getting is that the way it will work is that if you have 4 spells, you cast 4 spells per turn.
Yeah.
And you cast them in the phase that you want, and then the opponent always can dispel if they're within range.
Yeah.
That's how I feel it will
be. Yeah, exactly. So very, very, like, no resource management.
Yeah,
at all, essentially,
which is a bit sad.
Yeah, I think it's probably still fine, but that's like, so that's kind of when I saw this initially that I feared, because I really like the idea of having to actually allocate your resources rather than just going like, okay, it's this part of the turn, it's the same as just shooting, right? You just go like, okay, spell.
Yeah.
You know, but of course, it is more interesting in the fact that they can dispel, you can blow up or whatever, yeah. but you don't have to make any choices.
It could also be that maybe you can only cast one spell in a certain phase.
Yeah.
So maybe that you have, like, let's say you have two wizards and the enemy has two wizards.
Yeah.
And maybe you have one level 4, one level 2. So then you have to choose, like, which one your level 4 is casting first.
Yeah, sure.
And which one your level 2 is casting, and then they have to choose the same for dispel.
Yeah.
And so you can try and, like, do your level 4 against this one.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, a more important spell to stop.
Yeah,
exactly. Or if they roll low, you can say, okay, well, my level 2 is going to try and dispel it.
Yeah,
because exactly. Then your level 4 is the one that's...
Yeah, that's it's going to be interesting to see if the dispelling is going to be limited. Like, if you can only dispel a certain number of times.
Yeah.
Or if you just put your level 4 there and he can just attempt to dispel everything.
Like, yeah.
I don't know.
But it could be that you can only do once per phase for each wizard. Or I don't know.
We'll see.
So the last one for today is the Universal Special Rules. We get the Grail Knights.
Yeah, first of all, no new moles.
No.
They're really quite ugly, to be honest. Old metal ones or whatever.
But they don't look that much different from the Realm Knights.
This is my problem, right? It's like, if you remember when you could buy these, it's like the Realm Knights look actually quite good, I would say.
Yeah.
And these ones just look like slightly fancier.
Slightly more fancy with a bit more Grail insignia.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like you can barely tell that they are Grail Knights. Yeah. It's like,
Same horses.
I think the one thing that that you don't see in this picture, but that you can see that it is a Grail Knight, is that they have cloaks with a little Grail on it.
Okay. Yeah.
But I don't like these models. Like the Questing Knight models they have are really cool.
Yeah.
And they're all like very characterful, but these ones just look like essentially a Knight of the Realm with a green stuff cloak on top.
Yeah.
Which you could do to save yourself some money.
Exactly. And to me it also looks like these are on, I know it says 30x60, but it looks like these are still on 25x50.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that looks like an old picture now when you say it. Yeah, because they're very tight for that's 30.
Yeah, exactly. But we have 38 points per model. So I think we're sort of there or thereabouts on the old points levels for Games Workshop.
Yeah, most likely.
So, movement 8.
Yeah, so same as before. Yeah. Web skill 6 is pretty high.
Yeah.
Their toughness 4, actually. Strength 4.
Initiative 5. 2 attacks each. Yeah. Leadership 9. And there's a Grail Guardian, which I guess is a champion.
Yeah. I think this profile is very expected, I think.
Yeah, it's strong as well, I would say. Which Weapon skill 6, yeah.
Should be, right? And they come in sizes of 3+, which is kind of, that's the same, I think, as it used to be. So you can have a really small unit if you want. And then they have a fucking heap of special rules. I guess what's interesting is that the command options are only 7 points per thing.
Yeah.
That's down from what, 10 used to be?
Well, no, this is something that we're not used to. Because back in Games Workshop days, it was different per unit. And it was all random points values. It was never just 10, 10, 10. That's like a 9th age thing.
But wasn't it also... didn't they standardize it a bit in 8th edition? Because I remember in 7th and 6th, then it was also like completely...
Yeah, you pay like 13 points for like a champion or something.
Yeah, exactly. But I think wasn't it in 8th edition it was kind of standardized, but it was like really expensive, I remember. Like it was like 20 points, like a lot, you know?
Full command was like generally like 25 or 30 points.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was also different points for different ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, but also here you can take like an upgrade for your champion, so you can take a knightly virtue and magical item, so you can become a little mini character.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's worth it, because he has one hit point.
And you can get a magic standard as well.
Yeah, for 100 points, so there's point limits, I guess.
And then we've got all these different things. So Blessing of the Lady, that's like if you pray, you get a ward save. Close Order is the formation.
Yeah.
Countercharge, because they're cavalry. Finest War Horses, I think we'll hear about that in a second. It gives you movement value.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like that you don't get the minus rebarding or something.
Yeah. First Charge, I'm not sure. Lance Formation.
They talk about First Charge. I think it's they roll add an extra something
to charge. We'll look at that in a second because I think it's bonkers.
Yeah.
Lance Formation is the other formation that they can do. Living Saints is that they can all challenge.
Yeah.
Swift Stride is Cavalry, and the Grail Vow is... like Fearless or something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
But I think we also hear about that. So we'll let's dig into that right now, actually. So the special rules here, it says Close Order. So here's where it says like there's some cavalry are skirmishers, so these are not. Blessing of the Lady is an army-wide rule for Bretonnia.
Yeah, it's like you don't rule to go first, but you get a 6+ Aegis or a 5+ if it's strength 5 or higher.
Ward save.
Yeah.
And then Close Order Yeah, we covered that one, so that's just like the...
Yeah, and here it goes, so that counter charge is like you move forward d3 plus 1 inches.
Yeah, so if someone's charging you, then yeah, you move forward, you can choose to do that, but then that again, that's like bringing you out of formation, opening up to different charges.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It could be interesting, right? And then...
And also, you could counter charge and they could fail the charge still.
Yeah.
You're both like...
Yeah. And you also... But it's actually closer for them if you counter charge.
Yeah, exactly.
So it makes it easier for them.
I don't know when you... I guess you declare your reaction before he rolls the distance. You probably move forward and then his distance gets closer.
Yeah.
I would imagine at least.
But if you... But you count as charging if they reach you. So you get like a lance and your initiative bonus.
Yeah, that's going to make cavalry so much better. Like, oh shit.
Yeah, really good, right?
Yeah.
So finest war horses... you reroll ones when you charge.
Yeah.
Flee
here or we start to get into like all the random bullshit special rules for this unit. So okay, so you reroll ones for all the like charge, flee, whatever. Then first charge is that you the target loses its rank bonus when you make contact with them. Okay. Lance formation is this like weird thing already.
Yeah.
Okay. Then living saints. Oh yeah, this one is the weird one. It's written very strangely. So they issue challenges like if they were all champions, and then it says swift stride is 3 inches to maximum charge.
But earlier it said d6.
Yeah, and plus d6 to charge.
Yeah.
So does that mean?
So you have eight inches base.
You're 8 inches, and your normal max charge is that plus 6, right, for an infantry unit.
Yeah.
So swift stride is that plus 3, but you actually add an extra d6
as well.
So it's like so it seems like the max charge and what you could roll on the dice is disconnected. If you see what I mean.
Yeah, true. Yeah, because you add 3 inch to your maximum charge range, so there must be like a maximum charge range somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I would imagine for infantry it would be movement plus 6 because that's the highest you can roll. Yeah. But here you're adding another dice, so you could roll like double 6 on a charge, but you could still only charge 9 above your movement. Yeah. It seems like, right?
Something like that, right? Which is probably okay, actually.
Yeah, because you don't have these like super long charges, right?
You don't have super long charges, but it makes it easier to make longer charges.
Yeah, your cavalry is going to be very... Yeah. When cavalry can charge, it's going to be very reliably getting there, right? Yeah,
and you remove the rank bonus on the first charge.
Yeah, okay. But also like you're rerolling once on this shit, and you're removing rank bonus, and you have this, whatever. And then, okay, then Grail, WoW is fear and terror that you're immune to it, and magical attacks. And then also, the first time they fail a break test, they may automatically fall back. Okay? Sure.
Don't think you're going to be failing, taking many break tests with these guys. So yeah, there's a few stuff things there which are... The Grail Knights seem pretty good.
Yeah, to me, it's like this is maybe also something that I'm like, I've been worried if all the units are going to be like this, where like each unit is like, let me show you my scroll of special rules, and I have to like roll this one and that dice or whatever and shit. And then we're going to talk about the lances here as well.
Yeah.
And it turns out lances have armor bane. So then like all the cavalry is going to have this like splitting the dice in two groups. And like.
Yeah, so here you have AP minus 2.
Okay. So maybe AP and strength is disconnected.
Yeah. And then armor bane 1 as well. So yeah, there's a lot of some interesting things here. But if it's only AP 2, if you're not like strength 4, AP 1 base, then it's maybe not too bad.
I mean, maybe this means that they will... because we were thinking... That was something I was thinking about. It's like, what is the save of this knight if you go up?
Yeah, it says heavy cavalry. And then they have heavy armor and shields.
So heavy armor and shield, that's assumed that's 4 plus.
And barding.
And barding. So maybe they only have a 3 plus save.
Yeah.
So maybe in general, there will be much less armor saves, you know? Whereas both in 8th edition and 9th age, it's like the amount of 1 plus saves are kind of aggressive.
And this is what we've been asking for, actually. Yeah, this is exactly what we've been asking for. It's like, okay, horses don't give you armor, but if you have barding, plus 1.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think, so I actually really like that. And I think that's about it. Let's see. Ah, no.
They have some magic
weapons. We have another thing. So to add to the Grail Knights being really good.
Yeah, cornucopia of special rules,
So one of the virtues that the Grail Knights can take is the virtue of the Impetuous Knight. A model with this virtue gains the Impetuous special rule. So I'm assuming that's some sort of leadership. You have to pass a test or you have to charge.
Impetuous is probably this. Yeah, you probably have it on the Errant Knights, I guess.
Increases his maximum charge range by another 3 inches.
Yeah, okay.
So let's say that's like 8 plus 6 plus 3 plus 3.
Yeah.
So that's 12. That's 20 inches max. And then finally when... Like I said, I was just finally.
And... Good job for getting through, man.
Yeah. When this model and its unit makes a charge roll, you apply an additional plus D3 to the result.
Yeah. So basically, you'll be rolling
three
dices plus a D3.
Yeah.
And then and you pick the two highest and the D3, I guess?
Something like that. Yeah. So let's say average roll is what, like a 9?
Yeah.
So so you're pretty much getting like a
more than 9.
A 19 inch charge range.
Yeah, it's like it's like probably
on average.
More than 9, right? Because the three dices are with Swift Stride.
Yeah.
So then that average is more like 8.59 and then plus 2 for D3, so it's more like the average 19. Could be 10, 11,
19 plus your movement, right? Yeah. So seems good.
Yeah, it seems pretty crazy. At least you need to like either pay for this on the champion or have a character in there to make that happen. So I mean, you're investing points, right?
Yeah. And then this one seems very good as well. It's a dragon slaying sword. It's a magic weapon, and it implies that this is like a standard, like a rulebook item. Yeah,
exactly. That everybody can take.
Everyone can take. So there's a few different things here. Like I guess that's like when do you use it?
Yeah, maybe.
And it's combat. Strength is S.
So that's probably strength as user.
Character, and it's AP nothing.
Yeah, so is this good or not? Like, it has magical attacks, and then it has something called Monster Slayer.
So I'm assuming that's like Heroic King of Blood.
Yeah, maybe. I would guess. Something like that.
But does that mean if you roll a 6, the monster dies, like in the old days? Or is it like a bit more like balanced, like 9th Age, where it's okay, you get D3 wounds?
Yeah, we'll see. But it seems a bit like Monster Slayer has to be really good, right? Because otherwise this item does nothing. Like,
But also it could be, like we said, that there's maybe less armor in the game.
Yeah, sure.
Like the Dragon Ogre Shaggoth that we looked at only had Armored Hide 2. Yeah, so that could be a 5 plus, up save.
Yeah.
So then maybe the AP is not so important.
Yeah, that would be really good, actually, I think.
But I hope that it's just not like the old one where you just get dead.
Yeah.
roll a 6, it's gone.
Necrosphinx goes in, just like, whoop, okay, dead.
Monster Slayer Sword, and especially if all if champions can take
if
it.
If it's like hit a list, you're like, whoop, Monster Slayer Sword. Oh, he's dead.
Oh, roll a 6, now your dragon's dead.
That's why dragons should not fight. Should flap around, breathe, cast magic.
Well, if you can breathe every turn, then I will be doing that.
That would not happen. If that's a thing, that's going to be crazy. Fucking double breath Chaos Dragon, like, everywhere.
We'll see. And then we've got a Blazing Banner, which is Flaming Attacks.
Yeah, it's not activated, which I think is nice. Like, I don't really like this idea that
you activate it.
Because that was what happened in 8th edition, I guess. Yeah. It was like, there was lots of flaming protection in the game, but you could just always choose not to activate.
I think it was actually 9th edition that brought that in.
I think it was actually activated then as well, but I'm not sure. But it was like flaming attacks. It's just like there was no drawback to it, right?
Yeah.
Because you could always go. You can always go like, "Ooh, I'm not gonna do it." But at least now there's some kind of drawback to it.
Yeah, exactly. So we just get told about some other special rules. So it says move through cover, which.
So maybe you're like unaffected by a terrain or something. Yeah.
Open order, which is I guess we haven't.
We haven't really talked about,
because we've seen skirmish.
So open order seems like you're still like in ranks, let's say, but maybe you have different bonuses. Yeah. Like, you're not, like, in a different,
it's like, not like physical formation. Like, skirmish, like, all, like, fucking random, but open order is maybe, like, a bit more like 9th Age skirmish.
Yeah, maybe it's, or light troops, maybe.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, true. Peasantry. Well, I guess that's a special rule for the peasants, and then skirmishers and vanguard.
Yeah.
And then, I thought this was a bit cheeky, but to find out what these do, you'll have to complete your questing vow of buying the Warhammer the Old World rulebook when it goes on pre-order sometime in the new year. Paying money to Games Workshop.
Man.
So overall impressions.
I think, as you say, I think there's both good and bad. Overall, I'm excited for it. I'm kind of disappointed in the magic, I would say. Like, still, I think the other, and some things does seem like it does seem like some places that they haven't really like tested it that well. With, for example, this like marching column stuff, right? But I think overall, there's a lot of really good changes or rules here.
Positive.
That
right?
seem that could, as we talked about, make the game more interesting in how it plays compared to like 8th edition.
Yeah, I feel like this. We're also coming from a game which is very like polished.
Yeah, and this is probably not going to be that.
And this is not going to be that.
Yeah.
There's going to be so many like things that you have to kind of either agree with your opponent or you'll have to, like, it'll have to be like FAQ'd or it'll have to be like clarified or
That I don't look forward to. Because, you know, the problem is the war gamers are, in general, very anal people. And it's just...
The ambiguity is...
You're going to have so many, especially in Germany, I'm going to have so many times where you're like playing against somebody and they like, you go like, oh, it works like this. And they go like, no, it doesn't. And you're like, well, whatever. They're like, no, we have to check the rules. I'm like, I don't care. Just play it this way. And then they're like reading the book.
Checking the rule book is not going to help because it's not going to give you a defensive...
Yeah, exactly. Because it's going to be written in a weird way. Yeah. And then because English is not their like first language, they're going to read it. And then they're going to be like, no, it means this. And you're like, no, that's not what those words mean. Yeah. You know, kind of thing. And they're like, let me keep my German version of the book.
Yeah, but in general, aside from that, I'm positive.
Yeah.
I think there's some good stuff in there, and I would like to try it at least.
Yeah, exactly. I think the whole, like, especially how breaking and combat work seemed like it could make the game really interesting.
Yeah, I think so too. And it to me, like, it seems that the units are going to be more important rather than the characters.
I would hope so, but we'll see. Yeah.
And
because they haven't showed us any character.
No. Well, we had the wizards and
combat character, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. What about rebasing?
Oof. I don't think I would really rip all my models off their bases, like if Knifeage dies. I'm thinking in
converters.
Yeah, try to figure out, like, I don't think movement trace is the right choice because it seems like you're gonna have to change formation a lot.
Yeah.
So most likely you wanna find like a solution where maybe you can get like a let's say a hollowed out 25 that a 20 fits in, like 3D printed.
Yeah.
I'm sure that already exists.
Yeah, it does, for sure.
And you can probably just buy like loads of that and put like either a little bit of magnetic sheet in it, and then you just have your things like slotting in. I think that's what I would most likely do.
Yeah, I think so too. The other question is, what's going to be like a legal model?
Yeah. I think this is really interesting because a lot of people go like, don't worry, you can still use all your old 3D prints or whatever. But if I remember, you know, when I was playing Games Workshop games, it was like, you could, but there was definitely like pushback in the community. Like if you turned up to also even in the club and then you have like some mold that doesn't like fit, let's say, then there was definitely points in Sweden where people went like, oh, but you can't use that. That's not the right thing. And you're like, yeah, but it looks cooler than the right thing, and they're like, oh.
Yeah, I mean I have for my highborn elves or my high elves, I have two dragons.
Yeah.
Which I've like scratch built, but they're made out of parts from Games Workshop dragons.
Yeah.
So that's probably fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's fine.
But then the Phoenix model that I just bought last week is a 3D print.
Yeah, exactly.
And doesn't have a rider.
Yeah.
So if we're playing like obviously you and I, we don't care. But if you're going to a tournament,
This might be a problem.
Is that a problem?
I mean, I guess it will depend on the tournament, but I'm sure that there will be tournaments where it is a problem.
But I also feel like, especially because we've also been a bit spoiled with Ninth Age, that's like completely model agnostic. You basically just need a base size.
Yeah.
And now Games Workshop have clearly like put base sizes on all their units.
That's good. Yeah.
That means that there is some possibility of actually, well, it's the correct base size.
Yeah, exactly.
So it doesn't really matter what the model is.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's going to be very interesting to see as well.
Yeah.
And I think it will obviously depend on the tournament itself or whatever, but yeah, we have many question marks still.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be really interesting to see how that is, how it plays out and stuff like that. Because I think... Especially when you look at the models coming, like obviously some of the new ones are cool, but I think if I was starting a new army for Old World, for example, like I wouldn't be buying like the fucking 10-year-old kits or 15-year-old kits for, like, if I want an Empire army, like I'm not gonna buy like the super old Empire stuff, right?
Yeah.
I'd much rather get 3D printed. That's cheaper and looks better.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, so if that means that I then can't go to a tournament because they go like, oh, you're not allowed to because it's not official models, you're like, well, then that's going to put me off the game a lot,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, as well. So there's still a lot of, let's say, hurdles to actually playing this game, or let's say converting from Ninth Age to play this game. But I'm still fairly positive, and I think the community will make it as accessible as possible.